You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Really good after a long day at work to sit down with you and have a cup of coffee and go over our thoughts for the day.
So how was your day today?
Well, it was busy as always, but it's even better now that we're having a chance just to kind of kick back and do some talking.
Hey, so what do you think about Trump going to North Korea?
Well, I think it's great that he's going to North Korea, although I'm cautiously optimistic because Kim Jong-un does not have a good record of keeping his word, and this is too strange for me. I'm not believing yet anything that he says or that we may get something out of this. I'm hopeful, but this is really strange. Don't you think that it's strange that he's all of a sudden wanting to talk where this has not been their MO for years and years and years?
Well, you know, I'd have to tell you, and you know, kind of, you know, we can kind of remind each other that we're from a different generation than a lot of Americans today. Okay, we virtually were babies when the Korean War was coming to a conclusion. And a great percentage of the American people today don't know anything at all about the history of the Korean conflict. I mean, they don't even call it a war, but we all know it was a war. So when you have, you know, these newer generations of America, and of course, the newer generations of America also make up the mainstream media, they don't have any context because there's no historical significance to them about, you know, what the whole North and South Korea conflict was all about, and the United States' entry into that war along with China.
Right. And in our time with watching North Korea and all of the negotiations that they've had, even when it was Kim Jong-il, they've never kept their word. They've never, of course, we've never done the testing we needed to do either. So in all of the time and all of the years that the presidents and North Korea have negotiated about denuclearizing the continent there, this has never happened. And they're dishonest about it. And we don't go over and check as we should. And they have just really pulled the wool over our eyes. And nothing has happened. And they've gone further and further and further into their nuclear capabilities over time. So I'm really hopeful that this time we can accomplish something. But it's got to be that we can verify it. And verify it often and even more often.
Well, you know, one of the problems is that the prior presidential administrations, and we're going back, you know, four presidential administrations, going all the way back, maybe even five, with Jimmy Carter, going back at least that far, the North Koreans have never even given us any permission to step foot within their country, let alone verify anything. And so what we've tried to do is basically bribe them and appease them. You know, North Korea is a lot like a small child that throws a temper tantrum. And every time that they move towards starvation and they can't move their economy at all, because it's a very restrictive, you know, communist country, far more than China in that political model, you know, they start yelling and screaming and threatening to, you know, to set off a missile or something. And of course, we try to appease them by sending them money and sending them food and supplies and things like that. You know, now there's a new sheriff in town, and he's a good negotiator, and he's not going to put up with any of this because they are so close to a nuclear weapon that is missile launched and can actually reach out and touch us. Once they miniaturize a nuclear warhead, then they truly can put it on an intercontinental ballistic missile, and they can reach all the way across the United States and harm us all. So this negotiation has to be a completely different paradigm.
You know, well, and just based on what you just said, Ron, why would they come to the table now when they are this close after generations of trying to get this close and now they are this close? What is the impetus to make them change right now? Or is it another just another, you know, bait and switch type of thing where they're buying themselves time to finish what they're doing? And that's my concern. And I think that we've been foolish and we've been naive in the past. And I'm hoping President Trump is not. And I think that John Bolton will be a really good person to look over President Trump's shoulder and make sure that he's getting the assurances and the verifications that we need. But, you know, we'll have to just see what happens with it. I really am not convinced that they are being honest and true about their intentions.
Well, you know what I think? And you always look at behavior. I mean, I'm a behavioralist, so I look at behavior. And the behavior has always been deceptive. Bad behavior, never been truthful. And what they've always done is negotiated to buy time. Well, buy time for what? Well, obviously to buy time to get that nuclear program to a lethal state. Now, I love the new combination of Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, along with former Ambassador John Bolton. I think that's the dynamic duo, and I don't think we've ever seen anything like that since the Kissinger days. The next thing is I think Trump is doing a lot, and his administration is doing a lot of behind-the-scenes negotiating with China and Japan and our allies over there, and telling them, look, you have to do what you need to do, especially to China, to assuage and calm, Kim Jong-un down so that we can really put something on the table because everybody's at risk. So we'll see. I hope the media doesn't do what I start to see them do, and that is put too much pressure and too much importance on these initial negotiations, because I think that's all they are. He is, meaning Trump, I think he's just setting the table for future negotiations so that we can move forward to a safer society.
Yeah, I agree.
I'd like to talk about Southwest Airlines. And of course, they had a tragedy. And they had that engine coupling that fell apart, and one of the turbine fans broke off and went through the window into the coach and killed a poor lady and injured a couple of other people. But they had a safe landing, thank God. And I know you'll want to talk about something about that later on. But what I thought was very interesting was that within 48 hours, the CEO of Southwest Airlines, which is a employee-owned organization, came out and offered everybody on that flight, no strings attached, $5,000 plus a $1,000 travel voucher. No strings attached. That means that, you know, people can still litigate if they want to litigate. But I just want, we could take a minute as a couple of business owners and just talk about that business model.
Well, that's a great business model. I mean, anytime that people have a part of a company, they really want it to work and they want to do a better job. And, you know, I mean, you and I live on Southwest Airlines numerous times a month. I mean, back and forth across the country. And my experience is always good with them. I enjoy all the employees that work there. They're funny. They're engaging. You know, it's not kind of repressive feeling that I get on some of the other airlines where I feel like, I don't know, sometimes I feel like almost a criminal just going on their airlines, you know? So I really enjoy the experience on Southwest, and I'm really glad that they reached out and, you know, took accountability here and took ownership and tried to make it right and tried to do that right away without people having to run to lawyers and, you know, do all the things that they do to force somebody to do something. They stepped right up to the plate and are making an effort to do the right thing.
Well, you know, you and I are A-listers on Southwest Airlines because we literally live on that airline. You know, we were just last week, in Washington, D.C. doing some work. And guess what? We came back on that same flight that goes to Dallas. you know, before we took the next flight home, and absolutely no problems whatsoever. And the thing that I like about Southwest Airlines, and I know some people refer to it as cattle car airlines, but I'll tell you what, I will take the way that they put people on an airplane every time over what I see is, you know, other airlines where the service personnel and the flight attendants, you know, the way their customer service is sort of mediocre to poor. It makes you feel like they're doing you a favor instead of us giving them business. And I love the sense of humor on Southwest Airlines. You alluded to it. And, you know, I'm going to continue to use them. They don't sponsor or support this program, so we get nothing out of it. But just, you know, business person, you know, to business person, I think they're doing a great job. So, you know.
Well, and one more thing that you may not know is that the pilot, Tammy Jo Schultz, who piloted that airline to safety, is a neighbor of ours right there in
Fair Oaks, right?
Texas,
yeah,
right?
In Fair Oaks. And I think, yes, and by the way, Linda, I do know something about her, and she was the first female naval aviator, okay, in our nation's history. And so she had a couple of deployment into combat zones. She's flown that F-15 and 16 Eagle, and one hell of a smart lady, a person that literally broke the glass ceiling for females, and just did one heck of a job to save everybody on that flight, along with her excellent flight crew. So a big shout out to Southwest Airlines. Hey, and I've got something I want to talk about, Linda. I want to talk about our favorite subject, the state you love to hate, and that's California.
And there's so much we could talk about there.
Good Lord. It just
Where should
like,
we start on?
Well, here's what I want to talk about right
okay.
now. I want to talk about the problem that they're going to have, and it's a serious problem, with the water table and the water supplies, because you know California is such a dry state, and it really depends on the water table from the snow and the rain. Well, guess what? Well, last year, as you remember, the state voters passed Proposition 64 that legalized marijuana. You remember that? Okay.
I do.
And before that, a couple of years before that, they passed Proposition 215, which legalized medical marijuana. So now they started out with Prop 215. They legalized medical marijuana, gave everybody Prop 15 cards so they could go buy and smoke dope. Then last year, they legalized marijuana for everybody. They decriminalized it. And so...
I just want to say something right there really quick to you. That happened because nobody came out and voted on it. So the only people that voted in that election were the ones who wanted to legalize it. I don't know where the rest of the state was, but... That's my two cents.
Well, it snuck through. And, you know, California is no different than any other state. We have a lot of uninformed and undereducated people about these issues. And, of course, if you let one side spend a tremendous amount of money, which they did, and, you know, talk the public into having marijuana, then guess what? They're going to pass that. Well, here's what's happened. Since that time, they have produced over 50,000 outdoor marijuana growing farms. So leave the indoor farms alone, but now because it's legalized, it's all out in the open, so to speak, they've got 50,000 outdoor marijuana farms. And guess what? The state has found that 99% of those farms are illegal. So what's going on with the water table? What I'm catching here is that they're damming up some of these small streams that feed into rivers, okay? And rivers flow into, you know, our cities and our agricultural areas, and we use them to irrigate crops and drink water and, you know, use it on our foods and everything like that. But what's happening with these illegal farms is they're using illegal pesticides and unregulated fertilizers. There's a tremendous amount of trash. There's a lot of human waste. And when you dam up the areas and it gets into the ground table, it subsequently moves into the water table and fills our streams, which fill our rivers. And now they are talking about already this coming year a 23% reduction in the water supply and polluted waters.
And, so I thought that you were going to say that all of the marijuana residue was getting into the water and everybody's high in California, which is why they're acting so crazy.
Well, they're acting crazy because they're because they're smoking it. Okay, that's what they're doing. So, I mean, absolutely an incredible situation in the state of California.
Well, one of the water prices are so high, and when we had the avocado ranch in California, I mean, you paid more for the water than you could ever get for the avocados. But what was interesting is when we went to sell that avocado ranch, I don't know if you recall, but the realtor asked me if she could show the ranch to somebody who wanted to put marijuana plants on it.
Oh, no, I remember that, you know.
Yeah.
And some of our neighbors, because marijuana actually takes less water to grow than avocados, you know, that's why avocados are so expensive. They're such a high maintenance crop, and they take so much water. And of course, where we live down in, you know, Southern California near San Diego, we had the highest water prices of any district in the United States. So, boy, I'll tell you what, we were glad to sell. I mean, we loved that property, but we were sure glad to sell it.
Yeah. Well, it was a beautiful property.
Yeah, but, you know, people that are eating avocados and they wonder, why are these things so expensive? Well, you and I know why they're so expensive. Hey, Linda, are you ready for our next cup of coffee?
I'm ready.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American freestyle bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Okay, well, I'm glad I needed that warm up on the coffee. So, you know, there's a situation that I have been kind of reading about lately that is so interesting to me. And one of the things that, you know, when we lived in California, they banned the plastic bags, right? And we have to pay 10 cents for a plastic bag every time that you go to the store, and nobody will give you a bag anymore, or you can bring your own. And I really didn't like that law, and I'm seeing it in other places in the country as we travel. But either way, I do see that there's a problem with them when they end up in the ocean. And, you know, one of the places that you and I love to go is to Hawaii. And I really had no idea that we're flying over 600,000 square miles of plastic trash in the Great Pacific garbage dump, or the garbage patch. And now, finally, and by the way, there's like four of these patches around the world. They're wherever the tides come together, they create this patch where garbage gets kind of stuck there, and it makes a great big patch.
And you know, the big one you're talking about mm-hmm. is twice the size of Texas, and it's located between California and Hawaii. And
right, so we must fly
amazing.
Right over it. I don't know.
I've never seen it. Maybe we're flying too high.
I don't know. But it'd be hard to miss that big of a patch. But right now, there is I really thought that this would take years and years and years to clean up. And it's a sad situation because there are animals that get caught up in these plastic bags. There's birds, there's marine life, there's all kind mammals, right? There's whales, there's all kinds of different animals that get caught up and they die in this. So not to mention that it's just an awful thought.
Well, you know, Linda, it's not only, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, sweetheart, but I mean, it's not only just plastic bags, but it's everything that is plastic and vinyl and polypropylene and styrofoam. It's everything that not only gets tossed out of out of a boat, out of a large ship when they throw refuge out there. But don't forget, we have storms and tornadoes and hurricanes all around the globe. These things are constantly going on, and they're coming inland, and they're grabbing lots of trash, and they're all sweeping out with the currents. And of course, the currents move in various circular directions around the world. That's why there's five of these islands around. And so it really is these gigantic, I mean, islands of trash.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't know about this up until a year or two ago, and I just was astounded to learn it. So now there is a company called Ocean Cleanup Foundation, and it's a nonprofit organization, I believe. Actually, yeah, it is a nonprofit organization.
They are
out of, you know, I don't know that I know the answer to that.
Okay.
So I don't know the answer to that. But they're cleaning this up. They've decided that they've got a way to make giant screens that collect the material, kind of traps all of this material and holds it in one place until a ship can come by and pick up that big load of trash. Now, obviously, it's going to take numerous times and numerous trips to do this, but they're actually starting this now. And I just think that that's so good and such a positive thing. And I do understand from my reading about them that they have raised about $35 million now to start this cleanup. At least they're going to start it here on this first one in the Pacific. And I would think that it would be a great place for us to maybe contribute a few dollars to help them along, because it's such a great cause and it's just so needed.
Well, let me get my checkbook out, all right?
Hey,
hand me a pen.
That was easy. Can I get into a couple other new things while we're at it?
And $35 million, really, sweetheart, is a drop in the bucket. You know, I mean, we're talking about it, you know, just the biggest one is twice the size of Texas. And as people that, you know, live in Texas, my God, it takes forever to get across our state.
Oh, it does.
But, you know, the UN, you know, and you know me, I'm not a fan of the UN, but this is a global problem, you know, and you would think that the UN, rather than just a private organization, you would think that the UN and all these countries that contribute to this trash would want to put out tens of millions of dollars to move this thing. And I don't know how they dispose of all of this. It's way beyond my pay grade to figure it out. But, you know, I absolutely agree with you. You and I love water. We're in the water all the time when we go travel. You know, we both snorkel. I scuba dive with friends. And, you know, we have seen what happens to our marine mammals when they get caught up in this plastic and they ingest it. And it's just, things are endangered enough without exacerbating the problem and just making it worse.
Well, and our friend Bob does work with the turtles in Hawaii that get wrapped up in some of these lines or some of this plastic, and they rescue them and they disentangle them so that they can go on to live a good life. And it's really tragic when you see the results of what these things, you know, this material is, it cuts into them. Yeah. There seems to be a lot of line in these trash. It's plastic, but a lot of line gets caught up in there.
Exactly.
So some sort of rope and fishing lines and
fishing,
all those things.
Yeah. Gigantic, you know, fishing nets from those giant ships that go and they harvest the sea, right? And they harvest all the fish. Well, those lines break. And when they do, the mammals get trapped in them. And like you mentioned to Bob, our, underwater photographer friend, and I just love the stuff that Bob sends us, you know, the videos and the photographs.
Oh, beautiful.
The beautiful volunteer work that he and his friends do off of the island of Maui, Hawaii.
Right.
And so, I mean, I appreciate you, sweetheart, bringing that up, because that's a great thing to talk about.
Yeah, I think that we should... get your checkbook right out.
Hey, that's a done deal. Hey, are you ready for Frost My Socks?
Oh, let's do my... Yep. What's frosting your socks today?
Well, I'll tell you what's frosting my socks today. Okay, so recently, you know, Starbucks got into a big brouhaha because one of their baristas denied access to a couple of black men. I think it was in Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken, that came into Starbucks to wait for a friend. And while they were waiting, who was another businessman, and while they were waiting for him, one or both of them needed to go to the restroom. And so they went up to the barista and they asked for permission to go to the restroom, and the barista wouldn't let them go because they hadn't purchased anything at Starbucks. And then lo and behold, I don't know whether they were asked to leave or whatever because they weren't purchasing anything, but apparently the police were called, and it just ended up in a bad way with these poor guys getting arrested. Okay, so after that, there's a huge mea culpa from the CEO of Starbucks, and so much so because it got so much, in today's social media, hell, that's up on social media within 15 minutes, and international, within an hour. And so then he decides, I'm going to close down 8,000 stores so that we can teach diversity training and cultural awareness. Okay. And so that's a wonderful thing. But here's what frosts my socks. Here's something that didn't get any news at all. And that is, last year in the same city, I don't know if it was that Starbucks or a different Starbucks, it doesn't really matter to me, it's the Starbucks chain, another barista denied access to the restroom of a uniformed police officer. Okay? And what frosts me about that is... that is what I referred to, and you know, I get on my soapbox and talk about this, is blue bias. Okay, police just get treated so horribly these days. Okay, and they put up with it, and there's no protection from the courts because they're not a protected class. Okay, so they have basically no civil rights where they can contest or they can litigate that. And so, I mean, where is the good customer service? Where's the respect for the men and women that wear a badge that are actually out there protecting? And you know what? I don't know too many people that drink more coffee and eat more pastry and donuts than cops. So you're really shooting yourself in the foot.
So to speak.
Okay.
Right.
No pun intended. Well,
I mean, they're never going to get equal play, and you know that. But you know, the whole thing with the Starbucks incident, I don't know if it was right or wrong. I wasn't there. But what I do know is that they do have a policy, and the policy is that if you want to use the restroom, you need to be a paying customer. And I think that that's to prevent lots of people from just walking in and using the restroom. And you know, you could get me on my soapbox about this with homeless people, because I'm sure that companies have to protect themselves against having, a huge line of people that have nowhere else to go just coming in to use their restroom. But, you know, we need to follow the rules, but this should never have become this big of a deal. But there is something really funny about this whole thing that happened, is that there's a comedian that his name is Brian Sharp, and he wanted to make a point. And he bet somebody that if he did this, he'd get on national television, and he certainly did. And he went into this, I think it was the same Starbucks, but I'm not sure. But he went into a Starbucks, and he asked for his reparations for the incident with the two men getting arrested.
Now, is and, this the same Brian Sharp that is a conservative comedian?
It's the same guy. He's a black conservative comedian, and he's very funny. And so he went in and he asked for reparations, and he asked for his free cup of coffee for reparations for this incident. And the barista just did not know what to do with that. She asked if was this a real thing? And he said, yeah, I want my reparations. And he ended up getting a free cup of coffee out of it. And he ended up on national TV. So I thought it was a very cute little thing that he did, and, you know, brought a lot of attention to it.
Well, you know, I didn't get to see it, but now I'm going to, when we're done tonight, I'm going to go Google him and sit down in bed and see if he's got got some other funny things that he's doing.
I think you can YouTube almost anything. I haven't looked on YouTube for that, but it probably is there.
Okay, well, back to me for a second, because I've got another bone to pick on the first my socks.
Boy, you're really going for them tonight.
You know, I do. There's a burr under my saddle tonight. And, you know, I want to talk about what I see as a new movement afoot to remove American values and cultures from America. Removing America from America. And, okay, so what do I mean by this? What I'm talking about, and you know, I'm an old history teacher. You know, before I got into law enforcement and forensics, I actually started out as a history teacher and taught U.S. history. And it just really bothers me now that, and I don't think a lot of people even know this, sweetheart, but they don't really even teach civics anymore, okay, in school. You remember when you went to school and when you were in middle school and high school and they taught about civics and government and how all of that works?
They taught everything.
And the
rule
of law.
They taught ancient history.
Right?
They taught current history. They taught... Yeah,
everything,
civics,
you know,
everything.
The court system and how that worked and who the police were and the rule of law and why, police and society protect and enforce the rule of law and how things are just put together. The other thing, along with civics, that's really bothering me is they're not even teaching anything close to an accurate portrayal about our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. When they talk about civil rights, about teaching civil rights at the elementary, at the middle school, and at the high school level, here's what's going on. They'll talk about civil rights leaders, and appropriately so, okay, like Martin Luther King, and, you know, there's other civil rights leaders that we've had, the Hispanic population, you know, and of course we know this in California, Cesar Chavez, who was a labor leader at the time, and they talk about that, but they don't put it into the context. They don't talk about the Bill of Rights and what constitutes our Bill of Rights. In other words, what your rights are, and perhaps even more importantly, what your rights are not.
Right. Well, and this is a big deal to me. The whole issue with the schools and what they're teaching and not teaching anymore is just a conversation that we literally could stay up all night and have together, because it's been something that's bothered me for a long time. But when we start taking things out, like our Pledge of Allegiance, when we start taking our statues of our historic figures out, we are losing America, and we're losing the context for our kids to understand why they need to respect our Constitution, why they need to appreciate the Bill of Rights and what that gives them, and what will happen to all of us if we don't have those things, and why this country is worth fighting and worth dying for. And we are losing that context piece by piece by piece with every little thing that they take out of school.
Absolutely. You know, the whole thing about removing statues, listen, I get the fact that some people, especially some people in the black community, don't appreciate the Civil War and, you know, don't appreciate the Confederacy and what that's all about.
Sure.
And they want to take down, statues of, Stonewall Jackson and all of these types of people and Robert E. Lee. And, hell, they were taking down statues of Thomas Jefferson, for God's sakes. Listen, I understand that some people – don't appreciate those statues and those personages, but those statues represent more than the person. Okay, they represent more than the person. They represent the history, and good history and not so good history, but it's all part of American history. And every country, every society, every culture has had the good and bad. But if you want to do an analogous situation, and you and I spent a lot of time in Europe and especially in Italy, you want to talk about, you know, the Romans and everything like that, and slavery and the killing and the gladiatorial games and all the horrific things, you know, that happened in that country and in Greece. And, you know, we could talk about the Spartans and the Troys and the Carthaginians and all of that, okay? And they do not tear down the Colosseums. They don't tear down those statues because it's part of the culture. It's part of the history.
And they love their culture and they love their history. And they're making an effort to learn from that history, which if we don't have history to look at, we can't look ahead at being better people. But in Italy, when you and I were there, one of my very favorite memories of something that we've ever done is to go to the Colosseum in Verona for the opening of the opera and to sit in that Colosseum and listen to, I don't know how many people, 30, 35,000 right. Italians sing their national anthem at the top of their lungs. And they are so proud and so patriotic in that moment. I would love to have that experience here in America where I am in any kind of a stadium with that many people. And instead of mumbling our national anthem or whispering it as they do or not singing it at all, that was the most inspiring moment to hear those people and the pride that they have in their national anthem in their country.
Absolutely. You know, you come from a Dutch background. I'm first you're second generation Dutch. I'm first generation American and Italian. And, you know, both sides of our folks came right off the boat, so to speak. And for me, an American of Italian descent, going to the Colosseum in Verona and just experiencing 35,000 crazy Italians singing at the top of their lungs, I swear to God, it brought a tear to my eye. And that was the most phenomenal outdoor concert we have ever been to. And I think one of the most spectacular presentations of nationalism, Italian nationalism that I've ever seen in any country. And by the way, have you noticed where these same people that are forwarding this "Take America out of America" movement have got some sort of problem with what they refer to as nationalism? And nationalism is not a bad thing. Okay. Now, if you talk about, you know, like a Nazi movement, like National Socialism in Germany back in the late 20s, 30s and 40s. Yes, that is a bad thing because it was tied into white supremacy. But when you talk about American nationalism, what is wrong about supporting and revering your country and its values and its traditions and the United States flag and our national anthem and all of the hundreds
and
of
prayer
thousands.
And prayer in the schools.
These are
sure.
all part of our values, and every country has values and cultures. And these people just want to take that away. And you know, I just want to leave you with one thought, and I want to just try it out on you, because this is just my impression, Lynn. And that is, to me, this is more of a leftist and Marxist movement that seeks to remove the resonance and the emotional support for our country and the good things that our country stands for. And I think that the dark hole here, what is the objective, is to remove the context of America so that these new generations of kids that aren't getting the civics, that aren't getting the constitutional education, the Bill of Rights lectures, don't really understand and appreciate what America really means. And
Absolutely.
When they do that, like you said, they have no context. It's harder for them to resonate and to support this country, and if need be, to fight and die in support of this country. And I'll tell you what, I think right. that's what this is all about. I think that's the end game. And that's my frost, my socks for today, sweetheart.
Well, that's a big frost, my socks. And now, you know what? For this little refill, I'm going to add some Baileys after that.
Oh, please.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
America Out Loud is a groundbreaking news and lifestyle platform requiring top-tier analysts, strategic thinkers, and impressive commentators. I'd like you to meet Colonel Jim Warshak. He's retired from United States Air Force. He is a career senior intelligence and special missions officer. He's a columnist and commentator. All back at America Out Loud. Colonel Warshak, what is the state of our military today?
We are in a strategic rebuilding, and we are going to reprogram and reprioritize our mission, our capability, our training, and what we need to do to keep America secure and safe.
How can America Out Loud support not only the military, but peace around the world?
I think the best thing we can do, certainly for our listeners and for Americans, is to make sure truth is paramount in every single aspect of commentary, in writings, in whatever it is that America Out Loud provides to its listeners and Americans. That is absolutely key. If we don't provide that, then we're really not providing a service to anyone. We're just another news organization, and we actually become just part of the mainstream media. We've got to be above that each and every day.
Our goal is simple. It's to deliver an honest analysis and diverse opinions to keep you informed, all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'll tell you what, there is nothing like Bailey's with a hot cup of coffee at night. I just absolutely love it. Great idea.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I want to talk a little bit about good news. I love my good news. I look for it every day. I need that. It's kind of a little thing with me, as you know, I just need that to break up the bad news. There's just so much bad news all day, every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, we work hard and do all these different things. And so I like my good news. And, you know, one of the things that I want to say right now is just this whole thing with the Waffle House shooting is just such a tragedy. But it's also such an inspiring story as well. Because this young man, James Shaw Jr., that took the gun away from this killer, was, you know, just a young black man, says that he wasn't doing anything other than trying to get home to his own kids. And he says he's not a hero. Boy, is he a hero, right?
No, absolutely. I mean,
what better motivation as a parent than wanting to get home to your kids? And you're not going to stand there and die because somebody is taking shots at you. You're going to do something and act. And it's something that I think about a lot, Ron, because, you know, we teach this in our response to active shooter classes, that when there is a break, when somebody's reloading, when somebody's fumbling with the weapon.
Got a malfunction, yeah.
Yeah, you've got to act. You can't just stand there and wait to die. So I just, you know, hats off to this guy. I just, and you know what else? I just had heard that he also started a GoFundMe and is raising money for the families of the people that did pass in that incident. So again, double hero, and I just think so much of him.
Well, you know, what strikes me about this is not only is he a very humble man, because he did far more, you know, I watched him on TV talking about, well, it was really a selfish act rather than a selfless act, and I just completely disagree. But that shows you the measure, the wonderful measure of this man. And you know, I believe when I saw the photographs of him, he did take a grazing wound to his elbow. So this
he did,
was absolutely, he's in a fight for his life. And you know, he did the right thing. You know, we talk about run, hide, and fight. And when you're up against the wall, you got to fight. You can't even think twice about it. And that's what he said. I didn't even think twice about it. I saw my opportunity and I took it. But something even more is that look at the blessing that God gives us when we have an opportunity. It's presented, and we do the right thing, and other people can go home to their families as a result. So
I'm right with you. Heartwarming story. Yeah. I mean, it's a tragic story, but it's also a heartwarming story.
Well, what you got next?
Well, you know what? I'm a big believer in that police officers don't get enough credit for the things that they do. All day, every day, officers are doing things that help other people. And really, all they get is just a whole bunch of trash talk against them. And there's just so many different things that they do. So one of the guys that I thought was really a good guy was there's a Sergeant Aaron Thompson. He just, I guess about Christmas time, actually, I think it was on Christmas Day in Utah, there was a little boy, 8 years old, chasing his dog. And he went over one of those ice ponds, and he dropped in. He was under the water. And this hero, Sergeant Aaron Thompson, he had to actually break the ice to get himself to drop into the water. And he went under that frozen water, and he saved that little 8-year-old boy.
Oh, my God. Now,
that little boy doesn't remember anything about that day's events. But the thing that brings this up now is they just were reunited for the first time after this event, which happened several months ago. And, you know, they both went back out to that lake where this happened and, you know, kind of became fast friends. And Sergeant Thompson gave him his badge, the same badge that he had on that day, that before he jumped in the water to save the little boy, he threw it off of himself. And so that was a feel-good story. He's a hero. He saved that little boy's life, and you know, with no regard of his own. And this is not a singular story, Ron. As you know better than most, people do these things all day, every day. We just never hear about them. So I make a point to try to find those stories because I know that there's just so many good people out there, and it gives me heart.
No, you know, I'm right with you. You know, we can't say enough about, you know, law enforcement and supporting law enforcement. And, of course, you know, we both come from a law enforcement background. And our whole family, almost our entire family, are first responders, either involved in the fire service or in police work. And it's, and by the way, a water rescue, I can't think of anything more dangerous than an ice water rescue, because you can absolutely lose your situational awareness and drown yourself. You know, get trapped underneath that ice and drown yourself. So, hey, listen, I've got sort of a police story that's a good news story.
Oh, good.
Okay, and I want to talk about maybe a young man that someday will become a police officer, because he certainly has what it takes already, and he's only 5 years old. So I want to talk about Grady Fallon of Henderson, Nevada. You know, Henderson, Nevada, next to Las Vegas. You know, we've been there many times. And
sure.
So Grady goes to his mom and says, hey, I want to put together a lemonade stand and make lemonade, and I want the profits for the lemonade to go to the families of officers that have fallen, that have been killed in the line of duty. And I'm going like, what? 5 years old and this is what you're thinking? Now, his mom, when she was interviewed, she said, yeah, but you know, 2 weeks ago, he had a lemonade stand where he was getting the profits and he wanted to do Legos, okay? But look how that young guy steps up to the plate and hits it out of the park, because he did put the lemonade stand together, and he got over $400, and he goes over to the Henderson Police Department to donate it to, you know, families of fallen officers. And the police department was so stunned and so gratified by that that they made him sort of a junior police officer for the day. They gave him a little police badge, gave him a little police hat, gave him a police vest, brought out the, you know, all the bells and whistles, got the SWAT vehicle out there, got the canine dog, got the patrol car, threw him in the SWAT vehicle, let him turn on the lights and siren. You know, the dog did a few canine tricks for him, and they took a bunch of selfies with him. And, you know, when the SWAT commander was interviewed, he said, man, I just know if that kid, and the kid, you know, Grady says, I want to be a police officer when I grow up, which is not something that a lot of people want to do these days. And they said, man, that's what it takes. He'll be a fantastic officer. So, you know what? Hats off to that little young man, Grady Vallon.
Well, he sounds like he's headed in the right direction. So there's another officer in Long Beach, California, and his name is Jim Foster. He's a lieutenant in Long Beach, California. And there was a gal that he arrested numerous times by the name of Tiffany Hall. And she had gotten involved in lots of bad stuff, drugs, and just really was a product of her environment, which was around drugs. And she was arrested by him. And he kind of, you know, rather than just seeing her as somebody that was a drug user and really a nobody, he saw that she had, you know, kind of this tough exterior, but a really soft interior. And he talked to her and said, you know, why don't you look at taking a different direction with your life? And this was not one time, it was numerous times. He happened to be the guy that transported her to jail or was the arresting officer a number of times. Well, she listened to him, and over time, he just kind of kept with it, with talking to her about her life path and how it wasn't good. And now Tiffany is going to be graduating from college, and she has invited him to her graduation. And she really credits him for giving her the motivation to get off the drugs and do something with her life. And these are our silent heroes. I mean, this officer, he didn't have to take the time. He could have made the arrest and went home, right, but he did take the time. And again, this is not an isolated incident. He's a hero here, but there's just so many. And I just love hearing about them, because they do so much good and they don't get the credit
What I find fascinating about this is the introspection of the lady. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Because how many people actually take ownership of their lives, especially when they're addicted to drugs, right? And they say, hey, you know, this is wrong. I shouldn't be doing this. I've got to stop doing this. And instead of looking at the police officer as a bad person, she actually, I'm getting the feeling in talking with you, that she actually looked at the police officer as her salvation. And I like the maturity of the officer, because it's so easy to become cynical in law enforcement and just look at all drug abusers as, you know, just fiends. And I mean, I've heard that term used many times, and just bad people, when it really is one of our pressing mental health problems. So hats off to that officer. Yeah. And hats off to that young lady.
Yep. And one more thing that I thought was just a phenomenal, I mean, this is truckers and officers, both of whom just don't get the credit that they deserve, because truckers do a lot of wonderful things out on the road too. So in Michigan this week, there was a man who was on a bridge that wanted to take his life. So he wanted to jump off the overpass onto the freeway and take his life. And the Michigan State Police, they organized truckers. I assume that they did this through, you know, their CBs or whatever they use nowadays. And they got 13 semi trucks to park side by side underneath that bridge. So if that man did jump, he would only land on the top of one of those trucks and not far enough to critically injure him.
Fantastic. That is absolutely amazing.
You have to look up the story, because the picture is amazing. And eventually they did talk him down and he walked off the bridge. But, you know, what just what teamwork there for these truckers and these officers to put this together fast enough to save someone's life.
Absolutely an amazing story. Hey, I love your good news stories tonight.
I love all my good news stories.
I will tell you, though, they had a little bit of a police theme to them, okay?
Well,
yeah,
I may be a little biased.
Well, anyway, hey, listen, what a great evening again. The coffee was excellent. The company's always fantastic. I love you, and let's do the dishes and hit the sack.
That's right. Love you.